The fifth aliyah of Parshas Vayishlach is extremely intense and with many parallels to current events. The aliyah begins with Shechem's attack on Dinah, and Yaakov's reaction is initially to be silent. And Rav Shimon Schwab suggests that the reason he was quiet and allowed his sons to address the issue is because an act of vengeance can't have any mixture within it of ulterior motives, any aspect of shlo lishma. And here Yaakov was personally embarrassed because of everything he had done for Shechem, and this is how they treated him. So therefore, his initial response is to draw back so that his possibility of ulterior motivation shouldn't be mixed in. But of course, Shimon and Levi react with great anger, and they declare, Ki navala asav Yisrael, Lishkav es bas Yaakov, v'chein lo yaseh. And this phrasing is a little unusual because there's somewhat of a tonal shift. First to say it's a travesty, navala asav Yisrael, and then v'chein lo yaseh seems somewhat milder. And this isn't done. This isn't appropriate. And the Beis Halevi commented on this in a very significant way. He referred to a Gemara in Bava Kamma on Daf Samach Beis, where the Gemara tells the story of one who asks his neighbor to look after his coins. He has gold coins, and he doesn't want necessarily for his neighbor to appreciate just how valuable they are, so he tells them that they're silver coins, and he asks to watch his silver coins. And then, if something happens to these coins, so if it's something that wasn't her direct act, let's say it was an act of negligence, but it wasn't something she chose to do, so then she's liable, but she's only liable for silver coins because she didn't know that they were gold coins. She didn't know the actual value, so she's only liable for that which she accepted. However, if she was the one who herself actively damaged the coins, so then she's liable for the full value. And the question would be, why should she be liable if she didn't realize how much they were actually worth? She thought she was only damaging silver coins. And the Gemara explains, it's because she had no right to be damaging the coins in the first place. So if it's just a question of liability that she accepted, so then it's defined by what she thought it was. But if we're talking about her own misdeed here, her own illegitimate act of damaging the coins, it's not an excuse to say, I didn't know how bad it was. So in that vein, the Beis Halevi explains that there was a terrible act that was done here, and it was particularly egregious because this was to the daughter of Yaakov. But perhaps Shechem would respond, I didn't realize she was the daughter of Yaakov. I didn't realize just how egregious and offensive act this was. So to that, he responds, V'chein lo yaseh. So here, this is something that shouldn't be done to anyone. To treat a woman this way would be completely wrong, no matter who it was. So therefore, since the act was unquestionably illegitimate, the excuse of, oh, I didn't realize how bad it was, I didn't know all the other elements to it, is not an excuse. And it's a reflection of this basic principle that when we're dealing with something that affects the basic dignity of a human, so then it's wrong no matter what. And when there's an additional element that requires greater respect, so then it may be an excuse to say, by itself, I didn't realize that that was the situation here. But when we're talking about an act that is illegitimate to begin with and a basic disrespect to a human dignity, then there is no defense to say that I wasn't aware of just what a requirement of dignity was present here. There is a story that they say about various gedolim, and it could be that it's about the Beis Halevi as well, and therefore that would fit with the story, that he was sitting on a train once, and an individual didn't realize who he was, thought he was just a poor person on the train, and treated him disrespectfully. And then afterwards, when they found out who they were dealing with, so this man came to apologize, I'm so sorry, I didn't realize you were the great Beis Halevi, and the Beis Halevi responded that, I can't forgive you. I can't forgive you because I wasn't the victim here. That you treated me this way because you thought I was just istam ani. So you have to find such a person and ask him for your forgiveness. So this reflects this idea as well, that when there's a basic act that is wrong, no matter who you're dealing with, it's not going to be an excuse, it's not going to be a defense to say that, well, I didn't realize just how much respect was deserved. So the Parsha goes on to tell us the story about Shimon and Levi, and the vengeance that they wreak on the whole city of Shechem, first telling them that they are willing to intermarry with them and convincing them to undergo a bris milah, and then in their weakness, so they go in and they kill all the males of the city. And there was a major debate as to the justification, and if there is a justification for what they did. And this debate centers around the definition of the mitzvah of din as it applies to Bnei Noach. The Rambam in Hilchos Melachim in Perek Tes, Halacha Yudalid, the Rambam writes that this was a exercise of the mitzvah of din, that requires that the people of the world, all of them, should enforce the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, in this case the other six prohibitions. And if they fail to do so, so then they themselves are in violation of the code, and they themselves are deserving of the death penalty. So the Rambam understands that here Shechem, the individual, violated the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach with his attack on Dina, which is categorized as a act of Gazel, and the rest of the city failed to do their responsibility because they didn't judge him. And the Ramban disagrees with this, because the Ramban notes that, first of all, we see that Yaakov was upset with them. So if Yaakov was upset with them, it sounds like what they did was wrong. And if what they did was right, Yaakov should have done it himself. Or if he was scared to, certainly not to have been upset with them. So there isn't necessarily an indication from the text that they were correct in what they did. In addition to that, the Ramban understands the whole concept differently. He says that the mitzvah of din would not be a mitzvah for which failing to do so would incur the death penalty. It's parallel to the Jewish halacha system, where you find that violations of prohibitions bring about punishments, but failure to carry out a mitzvah saseh usually doesn't have a active punishment. And the Ramban actually has a tremendous chiddush here, that the Ramban understands that the mitzvah of din actually requires that all of the principles of choshen mishpat that regulate civil law are actually relevant to all of society, that Jews and non-Jews all have to observe all of the monetary laws of the Torah, which is a tremendous chiddush and the topic of the tshuva and the Ramah, and a major discussion in the later literature. The Or HaChaim raises the question that perhaps we should have understood that the members of the city here were anusim, they had no ability to do anything because Shechem was in control of them. He was their dictator. So the Laharis Nassan, or Nassan Gestetner, discusses in his Sefer that they were always complicit in all of his misdeeds. So therefore, it doesn't help now that they would have been powerless to judge him. The Gur Aryeh, the Maharal, in his commentary to Rashi, Gur Aryeh has a different understanding of what's going on here. And it's relevant to his comments at the beginning of the Parsha and elsewhere, in that he understands that this was an act of warfare, that essentially we have two national entities fighting against each other, and therefore that made it legitimate for Shimon and Levi to attack the population as a whole. And it seems like what he's referencing here, as commented on by later Svarim as well, is that such a blatant act of violence and disregard for the family of Yaakov was perceived by Shimon and Levi as a major threat to them. And therefore, in response to that, it was legitimate to see the entire population of Shechem as a military threat to their family. And therefore, to respond in kind was an idea that could flow from that. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, in his Sefer Emes LeYaakov, so he raises many questions on this story, why it is that Yaakov doesn't respond at the beginning, and when he hears about the idea that they all undergo a bris milah at the instruction of Shimon and Levi, he should have realized that something of this nature was going to happen. And he notes there that in general, there are two paths in life. There is the machshava rishona, the initial thought, how one wants to act. And then there's also the machshava shnia, the actual policy that is sometimes necessary when dealing with situations that require compromises that are not fully ideal. So Yaakov realized that given the nature of the situation, there was no way to deal with this in a straightforward fashion. So therefore, he was quiet and withdrew himself and didn't deal with it directly because of Chil Hashem. But he did allow his children to deal with it. But his initial thought was that they were just going to weaken the population in order to get back Dina. And he didn't imagine that they would actually kill everyone. So when they respond to him, when Shimon and Levi respond to Yaakov, well, what could we do? We're not going to allow our sister to be treated like a zona. He doesn't respond here, but his response is later in Parshas Vayechi, where he says, "V'afitzim be Yisrael." He will split them up among the Jewish people. And is that a punishment? Perhaps, but Rashi over there understands that they will be Sofrim and Torah teachers. So Yaakov suggests that the idea here is that their response and their emotional instinctive response shows that they understood more on an emotional level the suffering of Dina and were able to feel an empathy for that. And therefore, that is why they are worthy of being the teachers of Klal Yisrael because of that Mesiras Nefesh that they were able to express. The Chazon Ish has a comment on the story in a Sefer Emuno Bitachon that suggests that the main transgression here of Shimon and Levi, even if their act of warfare could be justified, but the fact that they acted in a duplicitous fashion, the fact that they presented one picture to the city of Shechem and actually acted a different way, that's a violation of Gnevas Das, and Gnevas Das is a prohibition across the board, and that was why they were worthy of criticism. We also find that they took the property of the city in Pasuk Chosayin. We are told that they took from the assets of the city, and here the Orach Chaim comments that that's because of the din of Knas. And that when such an attack takes place, so then there is a financial penalty that comes along with it. However, one would assume that this should be subject to the rule of Kimlei b'derabimine, that one who's liable for the death penalty is exempt from paying financial penalties. So here he asserts that that concept applies only to Jewish law and not to non-Jewish law. So this is actually the topic of a machlokas between Rashi and Tosis and Erefin and Daf Samach Beis and Aleph. And this also connects to the previous point, the position of the Ramban, that all the rules of Choshen Mishpat, of Jewish civil law, apply to non-Jewish society as well. So the question of whether a rule such as Kimlei b'derabimine would apply also is a detail of that. So we also find towards the end of the Aliyah another reference to the idea that Yaakov's name is changed to Yisrael and that it won't be Yaakov anymore. But as the Gemara at the end of the first parak of Brachos notes, but we find that it's not as absolute a change as with Avram, and he does continue to be referred to as Yaakov as well. And Rabbi Eliezer Geltzeler, in his Sichos, the Sichos Eliezer, notes the relationship between the names of Yaakov, which is a more humble name, and the name of Yisrael, which is a name of majesty and grandeur, is that the Saro Shel Esav had wanted to instill gaiva and haughtiness within him, and that he should only be thinking in such a way. But the secret is to be able to balance both, that one has to be able to have a quality of majesty and royalty, but also that humility to be able to connect to people, to say hello to everyone, to care about them on a personal level, and therefore both names work in tandem with each other. He also notes that the language of Kisariso, that the idea that the name reflects the fact that Yaakov fights with his enemies, so the notion is the continuing struggle, but recognizing that the ultimate victory is up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the ikar here, the main thing is that he keeps on fighting against evil and is willing to take on that battle, and it's for that reason that Yaakov was zocha that he merited to establish the prayer of Ma'ariv, as we saw in last week's parasha, because he is the one who, even in moments of darkness and isolation, is able to have that special relationship to God at his mission. And the fact that he continues to take on this battle is a continuing inspiration to his descendants.